The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Let's continue the discussion we had yesterday on the show about housing and these big investment funds, cuckoo funds, vulture funds, however you want to describe them, buying up large housing estates, entire housing estates around Ireland, one in Maynooth and one in Dublin 15, getting an awful lot of attention in recent days. Discussions are continuing within government as to how best handle this situation. They are asking the Attorney General whether they can place an outright ban on investment funds buying these properties. Pascal Donoghue apparently looking into the possibility of tax disincentives for investment funds. Well, Carol Dieter is a financial analyst and joins me now. Carol, you at least have to give Pascal Donoghue some credit, I suppose, for thinking outside the box. We're going to use taxes to get rid of foreign direct investment.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing because usually foreign direct investment is a good thing. It creates lots of jobs, and lots of jobs are created by building lots of houses. It's a wonderful thing, and now he wants to find a reverse way to work back the thing that he didn't want because he couldn't figure out how to make it happen correctly in the first place. It gets very confusing very fast. And, you know, I feel for people because prices are silly, supply is low, and then, you know, someone comes along and buys a lot of homes, and it upsets them. But this is actually happening all the time. It happens all the time with charities, with approved housing bodies, you know, who build estates for the purpose of owning them and renting them out. We have a shortage of rental stocks. I mean, in a sense, there's a part of me that struggles to understand why, when we need more houses, that more houses get delivered and we're not happy about it.
Is the anger that people have not that these investment funds, that they're not funding the construction of these houses, that essentially these houses would have been on the market anyway, and the fund has come in at the very end of the process and just snapped them up?
Well, that's not really always the case. I mean, quite often developments won't get built if they don't have an end customer. And that's a fact in property development. With some of the commentary, you know, it seems to me that people would be happier if there weren't 100 homes brought to completion, because that would be better than having homes available to rent, but where a fund owned them. So there is this kind of weird thing where it's like, oh, it's not so much that someone buying a load of them at once, because, you know, if Peter McVeigh bought them, they wouldn't be upset. It's really that it's this fund, and that implies that someone somewhere swooped in. Look, if the end result means anything, and in the sense of national importance of more housing, that means getting more housing built, then this should be something we cheer about. I mean, we complained for years about not having professional institutional landlords, about bad property management, and then it comes along, and what's our first reaction? Complain, and then do what we always do best, which is get some critical flashpoint and then create legislation based on the back of it that usually makes things worse.
More regulation. More regulation is always the answer, Carol, in these things. I mean, so is your answer, listen, just leave well enough alone and actually let the government and let everybody else and builders and developers and everyone in between just concentrate on building more homes?
Well, I mean, every house added to housing supply matters. It adds to the general stock, and in doing so, it improves our housing market. And if funds are all lining up to buy houses, the most likely outcome is actually that lots of more houses will be built to meet that demand. And we have to remember, you know, there's houses and apartments that aren't being built because of the uncertainty of COVID and many other things. And, you know, even people who might want to buy a house might not be able to get a mortgage. So how do you solve that part of the equation? And instead of looking at this and saying, oh, it's bad that somebody bought houses, why don't we focus on making housing affordable, abundant, and accessible? And there's ways to do that. But, you know, kind of jumping up and down and saying my feelings are hurt because someone bought a lot of houses, that's wrong, let's legislate. That is like the most politician response that you could ever hope for. And by its very nature, anything they do is probably going to be the worst
well,
response.
Don't go anywhere, Carl. Let me bring in Pat Davitt, the chief executive of IPAV, the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. Pat, do you support the government's move to try and prevent these big funds buying up entire housing estates?
Thanks, Kieran, and hello, Carol. I think it's important to understand that institutional investors have a place in the market, and they are very important, and especially ones that are forward funding developments like what we're talking about here. Unfortunately, this particular development, or these two developments that we're speaking about here, have taken people by surprise, because first-time buyers were obviously the target, or would people would think that they would be the target for these type of properties. And a lot of these institutional funds were at the moment buying apartment blocks, which are too expensive in the city for first-time buyers probably to buy. And a lot of those, as I said, any that are forward-funded, we have absolutely no problem with that, and we think it's a good idea, and there is a place for them. But for this, I think that there isn't a place for this type of institutional investor coming in and buying up these estates. I don't think it's possible. I wouldn't stop them altogether, but I would put a limit on it. And I think the government should be looking at it from that basis of putting
okay.
a limit on it.
So they have a role in the
role,
property
yeah.
market, but just not buying what we would consider, I suppose, classically consider the first-time family home. Is that it?
Yeah, and there's another problem with this type of site in Maynooth now we're talking about. A lot of the planners now throughout the country, they won't allow sites like this to be built again, like this family type home. They're looking at apartments on the site and the mix of duplexes and all sorts of things, where this particular site we're speaking about, apparently, I was never on this site so I don't know, apparently is all detached four bedroom and some actual four bedroom semi-detached and detached housing. So it's ideal for first time buyers, and the pricing of it in the region of 400,000 is ideal as well. So like, I suppose people were taken by surprise that this could actually happen, and
yeah.
it would continue to happen, and that's the biggest problem here.
Carl, what about that argument that there is a place for them but you've got to limit it?
I don't know. If Pat came up with the solution, I'll let him answer that one, because I don't know how you do it without it turning into a mess of hard to navigate rules that no one ever fully comprehends. I mean, the issue is, look, I get where Pat's coming from, and I'm a great fan of his generally. But like,
that is damning by faint praise there, generally. Anyway, go on.
No, but I mean, seriously, think that one through. What rules, so Pat, let's say you're given the keys of the kingdom tomorrow, and they say, look, Pat, you're now in charge. What are you going to do? What, there's a limit to like how much they can buy, or they could buy two but not four, or if it's 20 houses, they could buy 7%. Like, you turn it into a set of circumstances whereby its very nature, they would probably look at that market and say, you know what? We'll stay away from that entirely. Maybe we'll just buy apartments. And then people say, but I wanted to buy an apartment, and now the funds are buying all the apartments, and I can't afford a big fancy house, and I want to live in the city. I don't want to live all the way out in Maynooth. Like, it turns into a spiral and vortex that you can never find your way out of. Why don't we instead just make more housing in general, promote housing, say yes in my backyard, and tax things appropriately so that we have money for building housing?
Pat, what do you say to that?
Yeah, look, Carol and I agree on many, many things, and we even agree in this, believe it or believe it not, but in different ways we're looking at it. And there's absolutely no problem with what he's saying. We all are aware that we need more housing. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But like, the funds that are buying these houses, as to they're going to be social affordable housing, supposed to be, or they're going to be for private rental, whichever the case may be. I don't know if we even know yet what's going to happen to these particular properties.
No.
But if they're going to be private rented, that's one thing. If like we say, the rent for a four-bedroom house at the moment in Maynooth is probably 22 or 23. €300. These particular properties, because they're new properties, are outside of the RPZs, and immediately the price of that, because it's an institutional fund, is going to be go beyond that. It could go as far as 2,500, 2,000, maybe €700. And at the end of the day, that rental is going to be paid in lots of cases by HAP or by the government. This rental that we're talking about here now, this particular new rental that will be there, the next time they go to rent, they will be under the rent pressure zone. But
yeah.
in the meantime, all of the people that have been pushed out by the rent pressure zone, that haven't had their rents, that when they came into the rent pressure zones, that their rents were way, way under rented and way, way under the market rent, they're sitting back and saying, this is all great, guys. When the rent pressure zones are gone, we're going to be able to get this rent that these guys are all charging. So there's all sorts of things happening here behind the scenes that are very, very important and that shouldn't really be going on. But at the end of the day, the one thing we all want is more housing. That's a given. How we're going to get it, would this estate be built without selling this part of it on, this part of the estate
right.
on or not, is the question. I think it would be built, and I think it would be built for first-time buyers, and I think that's where we would like to think it would be. And
okay.
yes, Carol, it's great. I'd be delighted when we have more housing built. It's great for everybody.
All right. Pat Davitt, the Chief Executive of IPAV, and Carl Dieter, Financial Analyst, thank you both very much for joining me. Huge amount of people getting in touch on this issue on 53106. Someone texting in here to say that they've been trying to save for a deposit, trying to find a house on the commuter belt for the last 3 years and haven't been able to find one in their budget. They point out that they have a decent job. 1890-453-106 is the number as well for your calls. And Philly is on the line. Philly, I understand you as well have been looking to buy a house. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Kieran. For the last year or so, I've been looking to buy a house. So I'd be like a single self-employed person trying to buy a house. So it's a lot harder, I think, at the moment, especially with COVID. That doesn't help. But when you hear things like kind of 400,000 is affordable for a house, it's like, well, it's not affordable to me, you know.
I mean, you're looking in Dublin, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm looking in Dublin. Like, this is where I'm from. Grew up in Dublin. I want to stay in Dublin. Like, so I have a limited budget as to what I can afford, and there's very little within my budget that's affordable within Dublin. And it's looking more like more and more increasingly that I'd like maybe have to look outside of Dublin, which is not something that I necessarily want to have to do. But like, it's become more of a thing that I will have to look at, I think.
Yeah, you'd have to join the great hordes of commuters, myself included. I mean, how have you found the experience of house hunting, of going to view houses that you I suppose when you turn up you think they might be in your price range?
Yeah, like, I mean, not great. Like, I suppose with COVID and stuff like that, like, you've been doing it's virtual viewings, yeah. And like you're up against people like that are kind of putting bids down on places that they haven't seen. Like, sometimes I've been inquiring about places and I'm told that there's 25-30 grand over the asking price for the property. And then I've been told that like I can go view a place if I put down a bid, and they'll take in the top three bidders and then they'll go sale agreed. So there's just like you're up against a lot of different kind of barriers, I guess. Like, I've seen kind of hotel rooms that are up for sale kind of within the price range that I'm looking for. It's just like you're up against a lot of different elements kind of to try and find somewhere that's affordable for me. But it's kind of more increasingly becoming more kind of frustrating and
it's kind of dispiriting, is it?
Yeah, very much so. Like, kind of, because you get mortgage approval, you think, great, this is like, it's a really good sign, you know, like, obviously, yeah. I'm able to afford a place on my own. But then you look at places then and you're like, oh, well, actually, like, people are bidding well above the asking price, and then therefore, like, maybe do a uppers as well, so you have an extra more money. So, like, you're looking at like maybe nearly 60 grand more that you need to kind of even do it up, plus the going above the asking price.
Yeah. Listen, it's a tricky situation. There's no doubt about it. You find yourself in, Philly. We appreciate you getting in touch. Like I said, 1890-453-106 is the number. Tony Walsh is on the line, the activist and writer. Tony, am I right in thinking that when you were growing up, your parents benefited from, I suppose, what was maybe could be described as a functional housing market?
Yeah, hi, Kieran. Lovely to talk to you, and fascinating to hear the early commentary, because it really is all about dealing with supply as opposed to government tinkering with demand, which seems to be the case. I have a very clear memory of my parents, a young married couple living in Dublin in rented accommodation with two kids and a third on the way. This would have been the mid-60s, and unable to afford a property in Dublin at the time, which tells you something about the circular nature of of this issue. And as a result, we moved to Clonmel, and they were able to take advantage of, now you had the National Building Agency, which was rolling out social housing at the time, but there was also structures in place with local authorities and government where you could recoup 30% of the cost of a standard suburban house. You could recoup 30% of it from the government, and that's exactly what they did on a property that was worth cost 2,000 in mid-60s. And actually, when I think about it now, it was also the first housing estate in Ireland to have stove-fueled solid-fueled central heating ahead of time. Yeah, I mean, it was really progressive, but they managed then as a young couple. My dad was a musician, my mother was a full-time stay-at-home parent. They were able to actually get their first property and make a comfortable life for themselves. And I think many Irish couples and families of that generation were able to do something similar until, of course, up until the 1980s, when essentially local authorities stopped building houses.
Yeah, I just thinking, Tony, I mean, like a musician and another parent not working or not, sorry, not working, working very hard, but not out earning a salary, if we put it that way.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what hope you'd have with three kids under your belt as well, well, two and one on the way, of getting any house in Ireland if they were around today.
Yeah, and the situation kind of repeats itself for me, because I found myself, the largest wedge of cash I had that I could put to service of a mortgage would have been during the boom years when I was living in Parnell Street in Dublin. And when I had 30,000 and I thought I could sort of proffer that as a deposit. And I just couldn't get a bank to loan to me. And also, I just simply couldn't get a property that was affordable within Dublin, where I was working at the time. Now, there's another issue here, too, of course, that we need to be building affordable housing and tie it into a national spatial strategy and transport infrastructure. And that's also something like the Land Development Agency, which the government set up in 2018, is a really worthy cause. And I know it's building houses. I've been following the developments from this distance in Turkey. But the thing that the Land Development Agency is not doing, it's building houses, it needs to build them more quickly, but it's not actually tying that into infrastructure. And that's really, really important, because actually,
yeah,
earlier on, the National Building Agency and previous governmental opportunities linked infrastructure with housing. There's no point in building a load of houses and then there are no facilities for people.
No, you've got to have those amenities and those facilities and all those connections on your doorstep. Listen, Tony, we appreciate you getting in touch with us. We really do. Tony Walsh, the activist and writer, and thank you to Philly in Dublin as well, who shared his own experience. I'd love to hear your experience if you're trying to get on the housing ladder, as we call it, get on the property market, buy your first home, your second home, whatever it happens to be. 53106 for your text, 1890 453106 for your call.